Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of The Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me, as always, my two compatriots. There's Danny King, writer for The Film Stage.
Hello, Brian.
Hello, Danny. And we also have Nick Newman, associate editor for The Film Stage.
Hello.
Hello. So we are here this week with a special episode of The Film Stage Show. We couldn't make our schedules work to see a movie as a unified front this weekend, so we were initially thinking about just ducking out for the week, but on Sunday, the internet and the world at large was struck with the tragic news of the passing of Philip Seymour Hoffman. They've been throwing this honorific around, and I don't see much reason to disagree with it. One of the greatest actors of his generation passed away at 46, and we decided that we would devote an entire episode, though possibly an abbreviated episode, to exploring and celebrating his career, touching on some of our favorite of his performances. So that's what you're here for. That's what you're going to get. Not much to say beyond that, other than we should kick it off. We should also say that on the social medias, Twitter and Facebook and the like, we did ask people to give us their favorite performances of his, comments related to either his career in general or favorite performances in specific. So we will be talking about those as well. So if you left something for us to read, stay tuned, because odds are you will hear it out of our mouths. So guys, let's just kick this off. I mean, what were your thoughts when you first saw this news come through? Like, what? Because I can say, me personally, I was kind of unplugged for most of that day. It was Super Bowl Sunday. I was helping a friend of mine's brother write his memoir. He has CP, so I was interviewing him for most of the day. And when I looked at my phone finally, I had a text message from a friend just saying, have you heard? Which was, you know, probably the most disconcerting thing that someone could text to you. I went on Twitter and immediately knew what he was talking about, and it was rough. In terms of people passing, this and Paul Walker are really just kind of the out of the blue, barely even know how to react at first. I mean, I saw people composing tweets, you know, celebrating his career and his life and everything, but I couldn't even wrap my mind around the fact that it was true. Was I alone in this, or was it equally as hard for other people to process?
Yeah, so I actually had received a phone call, I'm not sure when the news first came in, but I had received a phone call, and I just went on the computer while I was on the phone, because I was watching a movie, so I figured, well, I can't really do both at the same time, so I'll just hop on the computer for a minute and see what's going on. And then the news actually was coming in at that time. So I was having a conversation about something else, and then it was completely derailed by this. I was just completely shocked, and I couldn't really... It's one of those things when the news first comes in now with Twitter, you always assume it's kind of a hoax, or there's some kind of mistake, because it just doesn't really seem that possible, that it would have died. And then unfortunately, I kind of saw it play out in real time as it got confirmed through various outlets and through various reports from various sources. And it was just, it was really, I mean, yeah, it was just completely shocking. And even the thing that I've kept saying in the past few days to people I know is the words I've been using is, I just don't understand it. Like, I really don't get it, what happened here. I mean, I know that he died of a heroin overdose and all that, but the development itself is so strange, because this was, I mean, you said it reminded you of Paul Walker. For me, in terms of ubiquity in my own consumption of various film and television, for me, the comparison is James Gandolfini, who likewise was someone who I kind of, you know, he was an actor who was current. He was someone who you just thought of as being there. I mean, the guy had cast two actors for his next directorial effort on Friday, and I was actually going to write up that news item that day, believe it or not. And he had two movies at Sundance just a few weeks ago as well, where he was there promoting them. And he was filming two Hunger Games movies. It's just one of those things where you see how much it cuts into. So the first development, I was like, I was thinking, well, no, this is obviously a mistake because he's not dead. He's just not.
Right.
But yeah, unfortunately, turned out to be true. So that was my experience where I saw it play out really in real time.
And Danny?
Yeah, so I totally have to agree with you guys that this was like an absolutely kind of disorienting experience. On Sunday, we were all kind of exchanging emails about scheduling and stuff. So I was sort of like doing some reading and checking my email every like 10 minutes or so. And then I remember Nick sent that message that said like, well, I guess we have our news item now. And it was kind of like, I guess, that text you received, Brian, because for some reason, like when I read that, like a chill just went through me. And not even for like a specific reason, because I mean, that could have been like a positive thing or just a weird thing. I mean, it could have been like Clint Eastwood is making another Dirty Harry movie or something.
I was going to say Disney buys another.
Yeah, Disney, whatever. But for some reason, it felt like negative to me. And then when I checked Twitter, it was, you know, 1,000 times worse than even what my suspicions were at that point. So I basically like couldn't get off social media for probably the next several hours, just trying to like process that information. And you know, one of the things that was even kind of spooky about it is last week I started spring classes, and for one of my cinema studies courses, the first movie we watched was The Master. So I'd watched that like 4 or 5 days prior, and you know, just obviously thinking about that film for days afterward. And you know, it's not like, I mean, it's like to be watching this movie in a advanced seminar at NYU like less than 2 years after it came out. It's sort of like a testament to how significant that film is and how significant, you know, Hoffman's work is in it. So to be thinking about like how much I love that film and how great his performance is, and then to just be hit with news like this is like, it just kind of knocks you out. And I still don't think I have like processed it yet. I mean, I've been, you know, reading obituaries and online pieces, and, you know, with things like that, you sort of want to kind of give an arc to the story you're writing about, but I'm definitely not at that point yet. Like I feel like I can't give shape to the event yet. And so I'm sort of like struggling with that. Like I'm sure you guys are. It's like,
yeah,
feels like this shouldn't have happened.
Yeah. It's funny just on a personal level. I mean, I probably alluded to it a few times on this show. I've had a lot of weird, unexpected personal tragedy in my life. So when a friend of mine texts me and says, have you heard? My immediate thought, because usually when someone texts you like that, you're thinking, oh, something terrible has happened somewhere. But in my head, I mean, if I miss a phone call from a friend who I don't hear in a while, I think immediately some friend that I know is dead now.
Jesus.
That's just the life I've lived. I've learned to deal with it. So, and the weird thing is, that would have been far less shocking to me than this news. Danny, you were talking about The Master, so this is an apropos time to say that, of course, The Master was mentioned a lot of times. Someone just said, in quotes, pig fuck, which is obvious. Brian Priestley on Facebook said, seeing The Master in theaters was one of, if not the most wonderfully confounding cinematic experiences I've ever had. Brian, absolutely. I feel like there was a bit of that going around the podcast when we were reviewing that movie. He says, witnessing is probably better. The interactions between Hoffman and Phoenix was, regardless of any individual feelings about the movie as a whole, nothing short of a joy. As previously mentioned in these comments, the pig fuck moment is an all-timer. Most actors would be lucky to achieve what Hoffman did in The Master once in their careers. The fact that Philip Seymour Hoffman had any number of performances of that caliber is astounding. Absolutely. And that's really quite eloquently put. And I can't find a single note in which to disagree with that statement. So let's clear out the master. I mean, that was obviously his most famous one, and something that got talked about a lot. It'd be great to focus now a little more on some of his more esoteric, lesser known, lesser discussed roles.
Yeah, I mean, just in general, like, or I mean, to talk about things. I mean, because one thing I've taken away from, you know, reading about other people's reactions have been kind of wanting to see stuff that I haven't seen. So, for instance, a film that was mentioned by a lot of film writers that I really like was Owning Mahoney from 2003, which is about, I think he plays a gambling addict. And a lot of people were calling that one of his best performances. And it was a film I actually didn't even hear of before. So I know, like, I'll probably be watching that within the next couple of days. I don't know if either of you have seen it. And then also one of the plays he was in called True West, sounded pretty fascinating. Him and John C. Reilly, apparently they would like switch roles after each performance, and the roles were kind of polar opposite personalities, and people were kind of blown away by the work he did in that. And I mean, obviously I can't, you know, go back and see his performance, but I would love to read that play and kind of picture what he would have done with it.
Nick Newman?
Sure. I mean, just, I guess if you want to talk about performances that are lesser known, I mean, I don't know about lesser known. I feel like there aren't many turns of his which go under the radar.
Right. It's not under the radar so much, but I mean, off the top of my head, I could say that things such as Capote, obviously, are going to get name-checked a lot because that is what he won the Academy Award for. Mm-hmm. The Master's obvious. Surprisingly, a lot of people bringing up, or maybe unsurprisingly, depending on how you look at it, mm-hmm. The Big Lebowski, which might actually, now that I think about it, be the first time that I was really aware of Philip Seymour Hoffman was in that movie, even mm-hmm. though I'd previously seen him in a few other things.
Yeah.
Slate.com had an entire article just written about a scene of his in Boogie Nights. But, you know, kind of outside of that, looking at some of his other stuff, I was surprised to find that a friend of mine on Twitter said that he loved specifically Philip Seymour Hoffman's pratfall in the movie Along Came Polly, which I am not ashamed to say I forgot was a movie that happened.
No, don't be ashamed, because that's not... Because it's not a good film.
Oh no,
it's not. But he is very good in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Someone actually, a friend of mine, had posted a link to a scene that he has in that movie on my Facebook wall, and I said this is like the textbook example of, you know, either being good in a bad movie and or elevating a bad movie, because he's really quite good and he's very mm-hmm. funny. It's a very good comedic performance. It's funny how. It's not really, and it's not like an early performance. It's not, you know, something that was kind of an outlier early in the career. This was, you know, this was after Magnolia and 25th Hour, you know, and it was just a year before Capote. Mm-hmm. So it was right in the middle there that he just did this movie. And it's, I don't know, I guess it's just that is a testament
yeah.
of some sort. In terms of some of my favorite performances that might not, people might not always refer to. One that I've been rewatching over and over, scenes from the movie Charlie Wilson's War.
Okay.
Which is...
Another movie that I absolutely forgot happened, but now that you've said it, the first image that springs to mind is Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Which is a movie that I really like.
Yeah.
It's directed by Mike Nichols, and it was written by Aaron Sorkin. But it's not, you know, it's like Social Network, Aaron Sorkin. It's not... You know,
Newsroom Aaron Sorkin.
Newsroom Aaron Sorkin, yes. Or more accurately, it's West Wing Aaron Sorkin, concerning the setting and characters. But in that film, he plays a CIA agent, a real guy named Gus Avrakatos, who is helping out the titular congressman with this proxy war in the Middle East. And I was watching one scene in particular where he's yelling at John Slattery, who plays a CIA suit. Over some terrible dealings that they're doing, and it's just a wonderful example of scream acting, but it's not, there's no overacting involved in it. It's just a very fierce, angry scene, but it's really, really, really funny too. And then later in the film, he has a moment where he's much more subdued, but it feels like it's coming from the same person. It feels like it's coming from the same mindset. And I guess, you know, to sort of also refer to something that might be a little lesser known, at least in terms of when you think of his performances, is Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, which is a Sidney Lumet film. It was actually Sidney Lumet's final film.
It was, yeah.
From 2007, in which he plays sort of a sleazy, slightly down on his luck guy who's deciding to stage a heist with his brother to get some money. And in that movie, he's playing a more malevolent force than you're used to seeing him in. And he pulls it off completely, where he's sort of terrorizing his brother, played by Ethan Hawke, but he kind of has no idea what's happening around him at the same time. Before the Devil Knows You're Dead is a really, really quite an excellent film. And that's just, you know, I'm hoping that in the time since all this happened, people will kind of see it in his filmography and be curious to check it out, because it's another one of those films that's actually amidst some really high profile projects. It was after Capote and Mission Impossible 3, but it was before Synecdoche and Doubt. Yeah. So it's like, it's right there. It's just right there. And, what?
It's funny how you just keep being like, it's just right there. Like, what is it doing?
Yeah.
I mean, really, what is Mission Impossible 3 doing there?
Yeah, I mean, that's him making the most out of a nothing character.
Yeah, and by the way, the movie is hit and miss. It's got nothing on Go to Call, but he's great in it. Mm-hmm. He is truly. I mean, that opening scene is him threatening Tom Cruise's life, and Tom Cruise is a man who, in these movies, we have seen kill a helicopter. And numerous times evade all kinds of traps and tricks, and yet 100% buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely wonderful. We also have here from El Savala. 25th Hour is one of my favorites. Such an underrated character with so much depth. Nick, you'd name checked 25th Hour a little earlier. Obviously, The Big Lebowski is a must. Obviously. And Capote just captures his essence and commitment to the art. It's hard to name a few. My favorite actor of all time. Capote was probably the most transformative film that he did, because one of the things that I liked about Philip Seymour Hoffman, unlike many other great actors, like let's just say Christian Bale, who I love, but he never really seemed to go for the full, I'm going to drop 70 pounds of weight, you know, I'm going to put on a ridiculous accent, I'm going to, you know, have the world's most complicated comb over. I mean, he was able to inhabit people through sheer acting instead of some of the greater tricks that some actors employ. And that's one of the things that I loved most about him. I mean, am I making any sense when I say that?
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Yeah.
I know one thing, just to sort of bring it back around a little bit, like when I was looking through his body of work, I was not only surprised like just how many films of his that I've seen, but how many I saw like 4 or 5 years ago. So like before I really considered myself like a smart person about film or someone who like takes watching films really seriously, for some reason I still knew that I had to see like Capote or like The Savages or Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. And it really like surprised me to remember like seeing those movies either in the theater or right when they came out on DVD, at a time when I wasn't necessarily watching every new movie that came out. And like I even saw Jack Goes Boating, which was like his directorial debut. And like definitely, I mean, I barely even remember the movie, but like at the time I can remember thinking to myself, like if he is in this movie and he directed it, like it must be the best movie. And like, I have to go watch it. And so to like think about what that kind of like, image he was able to create as this like weird character actor who, you know, doesn't at all look like people's ideas of a kind of Hollywood icon. to think that he would can like create this sort of cultural image around himself is pretty significant. And I mean, even a performance like Along Came Polly, like the fact that people are watching scenes from that on YouTube kind of speaks like something. And like, I always actually, there's this compilation of him on YouTube because he, you know, he's pretty notorious for playing weird characters, and this compilation is specifically scenes from his more like perverted roles. And it reminded me of like watching that montage, which is hilarious. It reminded me of watching Nicolas Cage's YouTube montage.
Oh god. Someone was talking to me at work today about that. The Nicolas Cage freak out montage.
Yeah, the freak outs.
But there's such a weird difference between the two of them, because one of them is campy hilarity and the other is like staggering power.
But I think like
line to walk.
I think like what it means though is like Hoffman had this really consistent ability to like lose himself in front of the camera. So like if you think of like the pig fuck line, like it's a hilarious line, but like the way he says it, it's like he's so explosive in the moment that he's almost beyond character and he's just totally lost. And I mean, like great acting, you know, like great directing or great writing or whatever, it's like a combination of preparation, which he obviously did, and then what you do once the camera's rolling. And like he had this ability to disappear and almost like make you aware that he has like gone to another level. That was like just insane. It's, you know, really unfortunate that we won't get more of that.
Yeah, it is. I want to go back to something that that you'd said about him beginning as a character actor. Because looking at IMDb, his first acting credit is actually on an episode of Law & Order. So I want to go through, I've seen a few of these, not all of them obviously, but two of my favorite moments of him in his more character actor stage. Obviously, we've already talked about The Big Lebowski, so we don't have to touch on that. Even though I can't imagine another person putting into that character the things that he did. His insanely uncomfortable laugh when Bunny says that she'll suck the dude's cock, or the way that he bends over and holds his hand out and then opens the doors to the firelit Big Lebowski chamber. I just, who knows? But two of my favorite. Early on, young Philip Seymour Hoffman, Scent of a Woman. Do we all remember him in that?
I've never seen that.
You have never seen Scent of a Woman?
No, calm down.
I refuse. I refuse to calm down. I'm going to take a flamethrower to you, Newman. You wouldn't get that because you haven't seen the movie. Anyway, he is fantastic in that. And he has the thankless... I mean, this is, for some reason, the early 90s, we had an obsession with, like, private boys' prep schools and power struggles within them. I don't know why, and I hope we never go back to it. But he plays a student that sells out the hero of the movie. And oddly, you don't hate him for it because he is succumbing to an immense amount of pressure coming to him from on high. And it's one of the few moments in a movie like that where you don't just unilaterally and mercilessly hate the character. And he's really good at playing characters like that, characters who do something detestable but have an emotional and psychological reason to do so. And then on the exact opposite end of that spectrum is him in Twister, which, again, Twister, a movie that has a million CGI tornadoes and a scene where a cow is flung around. And yet, some of my favorite scenes were Philip Seymour Hoffman being basically a comedic relief character. Incredible. And this is like a year before Boogie Nights. It's amazing. I did this joke earlier in the episode, and no one seemed to get it, especially Danny. But there's a point where his character in that is trying to convince someone else to go to their mother's house for dinner, and all he does is hold out his fingers and say the word food. Food. And honestly, me and my friends did that shit to each other all the time whenever we were going to demand that we go to their house to get food from their parents. That's just the type of guy he was. The movie had fucking tornadoes in it, and we were more obsessed with this character who just says the word food over and over again. I can't think of another person like that. I also can't think of someone else who could have done these roles and given them the same thing. It's a little it's a little crazy.
Yeah, one other thing that sort of ties in is just like if he was like, you know, quote unquote, like the actor of his generation, at least like the American actor, like we have to be grateful for like how smart he was about picking directors.
He was prolific, like, but he didn't seem to sacrifice his quality.
Like he knew who to work with. I mean, if you look at like PTA, Lumet, Spike Lee, Kaufman, David Mamet, like he was doing this work for like films that like mean something. And like I was just in my head, you know, I was comparing it to like, you know, quote unquote, the best actress of her generation, like Meryl Streep. And I'm just thinking like, because I just saw like August Osage County and I'm like watching that movie and it's like very clear that she's like giving this wrenching performance and she's like going to some really dark places, but she's doing it in like a John Wells movie. And it's like, why are you doing that? Like, she can't be making more money for that than Hoffman is on The Master. And so like we need to acknowledge that like he picked the right things to, you know, fill up his time. Like, he knew what he was doing.
I mean, I don't want to get into this because this is a moment of celebration of an actor. I don't really like Meryl Streep.
Yeah, I didn't want to get into that either. Yeah.
Haven't we discussed?
We have discussed it, but I mean, just like, I'll use it only as a way of saying everything I just said about him. And I mean, we talked about him screaming pig fuck, and how that was like, he didn't seem in control in that moment. And for a moment like that, you need to be able to relinquish that control to just give into the feelings of the character. And I don't believe that Meryl Streep has ever done that in a film. You're always very conscious of her choices. And, right. You know, at a certain time period, in a certain place, that was great. But I think that Philip Seymour Hoffman better embodied more modern sensibilities in terms of go-for-broke acting.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that someone else named Check Twister on Facebook, Bill Graham, he said, Hoffman had so many sides to him. One of my favorites was actually one of his earliest in Twister. Hell yeah, Bill. As the wild tornado chaser. He was all over the map, but just had so much energy that if he became more than just a secondary character, he became memorable. Yet it felt natural. He wasn't overdoing his character or hogging the spotlight. He just was. Early signs of his gravitational presence on screen. 100% right, Bill. You and me. We should watch Twister together one day. I'm not joking. I'll do a Twister
review. I have to rewatch it. Yeah, I gotta rewatch a lot of these movies.
Obviously you do. Here's a question, because we've gone over some of these, and we'll continue to talk about films of his that we liked. Do you have any really big, kind of iconic Philip Seymour Hoffman blind spots?
I don't think Scent of
Hunger Games
counts.
No, Scent of the Woman doesn't really count. That's just that's more of an Al Pacino blind spot, because that's kind of the role that most people make fun of him for now.
Right.
I'll start it off. I have not seen Synecdoche, New York.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was extremely excited about that movie when it came out. Did not get to it for like the week it was in theaters here. And I just never tracked it down.
And then it was never released on home video. So, yeah.
Yeah, no. What was I going to do? Look, man. I don't even know. There's not really a way for me to justify it. I just never did it. A friend of mine actually watched it the other week and was talking about how much she loved it. And I told her, I was like, I guess I need to borrow that from you. And now I guess I really need to borrow it from her.
Okay.
Yeah.
In terms of, well, I actually, that whole movie is about, like, you know, aging and dying. So I don't know. in the light of recent news, that seems like that'd be kind of a difficult watch, but it's worth seeing because it's an amazing performance. I actually posted this sort of speaks to the whole current nature of this news is that days ago, I was like last week, I was thinking about a scene in that movie involving him and Tom Noonan, the great Tom Noonan. I was just thinking about that scene just on its own. And then I watched it again after Sunday's news came in, and I was just shocked watching it. How much ground he covers in something like 80 seconds of this one scene. You'll know it when you see it, but it's absolutely incredible. And I'm not even sure if it's the best moment in the entire film. As far as my own Hoffman blind spots go, there's one movie, I don't know, I mean, this doesn't feel like necessarily a big one because it wasn't really discussed until just a couple of days ago, but he was in a movie called Love, Liza from 2002. Okay. Has anybody here seen it?
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Have you seen it?
No, there's some, no, but I've seen the YouTube excerpts and they're kind of funny, but I'm sure in context the movie's like a drama.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure in context the movie's like...
I think there's like a classroom scene. Like, does he play a teacher or...
It's listed on Wikipedia. It's called a tragicomedy. So make that
one. Okay.
Yeah, so that one's been coming up. People say that it's a terrific performance. You know, it's a kind of a... There's also a film called Flawless with Robert De Niro.
Yeah, we got some mentions of Flawless.
In the film, he plays like a transgender character. That was... I was driving around the other day, believe it or not. Believe it or not, I was driving around. No, that's not how I'm supposed to phrase that. I was driving around the other day in the snow trying to find a parking spot. Oh, and and believe it or not, NPR was replaying old interviews with him, and he was talking about that role. And it was if if you're curious enough and you're listening to this, so I figure you are, you should look that up, a Fresh Air interview he did, and it gives a lot of great insight into sort of his acting process and how he got into the head of a character. The way he described it really had me wanting to see it. Another one that people might be surprised by is Happiness.
Yeah, Happiness.
Because I hate Todd Solondz so much, and I just...
All right, shots fired at Todd Solondz.
Oh, he's not doing anything. He's not going to care.
Further shots fired.
Not to be negative, I really hate him so much. And so because of that, I just thought, I don't need to see this film, but... But it is described as a really significant performance of his, at least. So for that much, I imagine it's worth checking out. I wouldn't be surprised if the both of you have seen that film.
Happiness?
Yeah.
I saw Happiness a long time ago. I guess junior or senior of college.
Okay.
Since we talked about Flawless, Terrell Rice... My favorite performance of Philip Seymour Hoffman was in Almost Famous, of course. A lot of people are saying that nowadays. The closest after that would be Flawless. That's what Terrell Rice said. So another shout out to Flawless, a film that I can't remember hearing about.
Oops. And yeah, Cameron Crowe wrote a really nice thing on his blog about that scene in Almost Famous, and how the scene was completely different from a kind of acting standpoint in his mind, and then it turned out a lot better with Hoffman doing it.
And we'd also just talked about am I saying that right? Synecdoche. Okay.
Synecdoche.
Yeah, Synecdoche. Kind of sounds like Schenectady.
That's the idea.
Yeah, that's the idea. I know. It's layers upon layers, of course. I guess I haven't said it yet, but I probably should. I absolutely apologize to anyone who took the time to write to us whose name I'm butchering. Giovanni Colantiano. In my brain, it's nearly impossible to separate Hoffman from Synecdoche, New York. That's by no means a slight against any of his other countless brilliant performances. But Caden Cotard, is that how you say that? Anyone?
Caden Cotard.
Yeah.
Okay, Caden Cotard is an unforgettable character that Hoffman puts so much into. It's rare to see a performance where the actor really can make a fictional character feel like a living, breathing human being. He's invisible as a performer in the role, leading another full life on screen. It's hard to put into words, but when you see it, you feel it. 30 years from now, we'll be talking about that film the way we talk about Citizen Kane now, and we'll be mourning all over again as we think about how many more incredible performances Hoffman could slash should have delivered in that time. Not having seen the movie, I cannot say any statement to the contrary or to the, what's the other word? Or in support of that.
Very nice comment.
Yeah, it's a great comment. I hope to one day see the film so I can know if I agree.
I think is a late quartet, like on Netflix Instant. I might like watch that soon. I think he played someone in a quartet. So
really? Oh yeah, he did.
And I haven't seen
it. It's on Netflix.
Interesting. He was also in Patch Adams. He's Mitch. That's a very Philip Seymour Hoffman character name.
I don't know why we haven't yet talked about
Maine.
No, I was going to say Punch Drunk Love.
That's actually a very good point. Yeah.
Yes, which is absolutely one of my favorite moments pretty much in any film is when he's yelling at Adam Sandler on the phone. He goes, "Shut up. Shut up." That moment is magic. Yeah. And that movie, I mean, that's an absolutely wonderful film, and his turn in that is really terrific as the mattress man. Again, embodying sleaze very well.
Yeah.
Just with his long hair and sort of like his cheap suits and the way he carries himself physically. It's terrific, terrific work. He actually, I don't know, I guess that's sort of, it's part of the whole Paul Thomas Anderson collaboration where you have these four performances, which are so different because there's also, no, I'm sorry, these five performances because there's also Hard Eight, where he plays a man at a craps table.
That's a good one.
That was one of his first roles when he wasn't even, and it's not even, what's interesting is if you watch it, it's not Philip Seymour Hoffman there in the role. It's just sort of this actor who they found to play kind of a sleazy fellow. That's also a really great turn that people kind of forget about, even if it's from a heralded director and one of his more famous collaborators.
Okay, it's funny that you mention embodying sleaze, because he's definitely someone who was quite good at doing that. But one of my favorite performances of a movie that I go to a lot that I think I might have talked about on this show is State and Maine.
Mm-hmm.
Where he plays a playwright, Joseph Turner White. And it's a Mamet film, so obviously I'm going to enjoy it. And he plays the opposite of someone coated in sleaze. He is the white bread moral center of the movie. And he does that equally as well. Impossible to typecast this man. And he pulls off a kind of level of naivete. And he does it convincingly, and it's really quite good. And that's another one that I don't feel like a lot of people have talked about. It's a smaller film, 2000. I think about that film, I do not think that it's from 2000. I assume it's like 92, but, you know. And that's another one of those ones that it came out the same year as Almost Famous, and right after The Talented Mr. Ripley and Magnolia. So, as Nick likes to say, it's just right there.
Yeah, Talented Mr. Ripley is a really good movie.
Oh, yeah.
That a few times. One other one I saw that I like almost just remember that I saw was Mary and Max, which was a stop-motion film. So he gave it was obviously like a voice performance. I don't know if that was maybe his only performance in an animated film. But it's a really sweet movie that, you know, I think was pretty small scale.
Yeah. And then we haven't really talked about Doubt. Any strong feelings on Doubt?
It's a fine movie. He's quite good in it, especially since there was the whole, actually one of the interviews I heard him on for NPR was about Doubt. And in it, he talked about the complexity of playing a character who you don't know, because the whole film pivots on something he may or may not have done.
Right, you got to have a lot of doubt about the character.
Yes, yeah. And
I'll be that guy. I'll
and
say
he talked about, I mean, the fucking movie ends with Meryl Streep screaming, "I have doubt."
So yeah. Funny.
It's anyway. It's again a movie, I guess, like August Osage County, also Meryl Streep. It's very play. It's very play like.
Yeah, I mean, it's made by a playwright.
Yeah, like they were both. They're both adapted from plays and.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I can imagine sitting in a playhouse where you're...
Good sense of atmosphere.
Oh yeah, no, the movie has a good sense of atmosphere. The thing with the light bulb, the general steel gray tones of it. No, it's a movie filled with a lot of great performances. I think he does a good job in it, and he does a good job of instilling, I'm sorry, that doubt in you.
One thing I do find entertaining about that performance is like in a lot of his roles, there's like you watch him for a few scenes and you're like, okay, at some point in this movie, like this character is just gonna crack and like yell and scream or pig fuck, you know, there's gonna be like a moment like that. And in Doubt, once he's like accused of this act, pretty much every scene is him like freaking out. So like if you're a Hoffman fan, like Doubt is incredibly, incredibly entertaining, because basically after he is accused of this act, every scene is him yelling. So it's just like this barrage of like vintage Hoffman freak out moments. He's just like, you know, what did I do or what's happening? Like, cause he just doesn't understand why he's being accused. And like, it's really fun to watch if you like these moments where he freaks out.
Absolutely. We're about at that point. I'm just going to throw out some Ides of March, a movie I did not like, but that I thought he was very good in. Does anyone like the Ides of March?
Yeah, I do.
Really? That was another one that felt very play-like to me. Obviously, again, done from a play, but I don't know. It was. I guess here's the thing. I'm in Washington, so if the moral of a movie is politics can destroy even the greatest idealist, duh, and or hello. Archer reference for everyone out there. I did not see Pirate Radio.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
Though that looked like he was kind of revisiting the almost famous role. Any other things that we want to talk about before we wrap up?
Did I mention Moneyball? He has a really nice performance.
Yes. You did not mention Moneyball, but I will say, yeah, that I'll back you up on that one.
Really underplayed in a kind of awesome way, like for a mainstream film, for him to show up for like three scenes or something and be so kind of quiet was very surprising.
Yeah, well, again, that kind of goes to this this thing that we visited in his career before. He wasn't a guy who needed the spotlight. He'd take it if it was given to him, but he was also very good at playing in a group. There is a comment, the final comment that we will read tonight, that we got on Facebook. He's one of the greatest in movie star history. Really unexpected. I like the ambiguity there, because first of all, it's really unexpected that he would pass away. But it's also kind of really unexpected that he would be someone who you could even claim was a movie star.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest, Hollywood's a shallow industry, just given his physical features. Given that he is quite literally the whitest man that I've ever seen on screen. I mean, it's true, but here's the thing. I almost don't even think of him as a movie star. Because unlike a Tom Cruise or a Tom Hanks, he never seemed to goad the spotlight on. He never seemed to command attention outside of his roles that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that, and you know, I guess one of the biggest qualifiers of a movie star, I mean, you never really saw a lot of his personal life falling into the media spotlight, which is another thing that made the circumstances surrounding his death, which are, I believe as of recording, still under some kind of investigation. And that's made them so surprising. And it kind of gives you a kind of shocking insight to these people who we've just spent 45 minutes talking about this guy, like he's a great friend of ours. Seen just an insane amount of films that he's done, experienced a lot of his work, and yet at the end of the day, if you'd asked me the day before this happened if I even knew that he had this kind of problem that he was struggling with, I don't think I would have been able to tell you that he did.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that's just me not paying attention. Or just him holding back and staying out of the spotlight. But it does give you appreciation for the lives of the people that we spend our time idolizing and dissecting on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I'll close out.
I feel like we can never really, irrespective of the fact that he has he has movies that are actually still going to come out. We can never really close out it just feels weird closing out a discussion about him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's just like he'll always kind of be there.
And it's a little difficult not saying, you know, looking forward to what he does next.
Yeah.
He does have some stuff yet to come out. So, I mean, we do technically still have some things to look forward to, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, what should I say here? Okay, here's the thing that I found really interesting is that, when someone dies, someone who's like a public figure and I guess still in a spotlight of some sort, you know, you usually see things on Twitter and on Facebook, and it's always really quite imbalanced, I think, for someone like myself, because I follow a bunch of film people on Twitter. So you see all of that, and then on Facebook you might get, you know, 4 or 5 mentions. There were quite a few on my Facebook feed of people mourning his death. And these are people my age, keep in mind. Like, there was a lot of it. And it was, at once I got it, but I was still surprised. But then it just made me realize how much he was an actor of this moment and sort of the reach he had. Because I received notices from both of my parents, actually, who were upset by the news. And then I saw a bunch of, you know, bunch of college friends posting about it too. And people, you know, changing their cover photos to their favorite images of him from a movie, or posting YouTube clips of performances they were fans of, things like that. And then actually later that night, I hosted on campus a screening of the film Repo Man, which has nothing to do with Philip Seymour Hoffman, really. If you've seen it, you'll understand. But that was what, you know, everyone was talking about. It was just kind of in the air. It was the talk of the moment. And I was trying to think, you know, how many other actors could pull off that sort of thing, not just getting that much attention, but earning that much respect and seeing such an outpouring of love from such a wide range of people who are in my age group, sort of the 20 to 25 set. And it's just, it's so again,
I fall,
it's
just outside of your age group.
Yeah.
Pressing.
I'm using Philip Seymour Hoffman's death as another excuse to insult you. Yes. That's what this was all about.
Look, that's really the greatest gift that he could give to us.
Yes. But yeah, it's funny because he's not, what I'm getting is he's not Ryan Gosling, you know,
right?
Like he's Philip Seymour Hoffman. He's a serious, not that Ryan Gosling isn't a serious actor, but this is a guy who, you know, was doing, you know, fucking like the Hunger Games so he could fund a play in New York or something. Mm-hmm. He was not really on the cover of People magazine or anything like that. And yet everyone seems to have been impacted by this in some way.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say this lovingly. I have idiot friends at work who were talking about him on Monday and today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of crazy. The fact that they knew who he was and actually, you know, we're talking about movies they liked him in. Because,
mm-hmm.
again, you know, mm-hmm. lovingly, idiot friends. I've called them idiots to their face. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's the kind of guy I am.
So, yeah, that's something I've just been thinking about. And believe it or not, I had to test out a DVD before the screening on the projection booth. And the first trailer that came up was for Synecdoche, New York.
Jeez.
And I was just, oh, fuck you. That was basically my reaction. Also, just one last thing. There is sort of, you know, I mean, as always, there's a cloud hanging over this because he died, but it's also the unfortunate circumstances of his death, where he died of a drug overdose.
Yeah.
I will say that there is, I really do think there is a silver lining to this, in that it is bringing to light further the horrors of heroin addiction. Everybody knows that it's bad, but something like this, it takes something like this to kind of put a face to it and to understand just what it can do and how really no one is immune from it. And I do think that the silver lining here is that people are going to see this, and there will be people who do take this as an opportunity to better themselves.
Yeah.
And to change their ways. I am certain of this. And if that is, you know, it's horrible, but what's happened here, but if that is an impact, if that is part of his legacy, then I don't know. I think there's, you know, this is not just me trying to make light of a terrible thing. I really do think there is something to be said for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So. All right. Wait, Dan, do you have a final?
Looking forward to A Most Wanted Man.
Okay. So that's it. That's all for today. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you for writing in. If you do have any more thoughts that you'd like to share, obviously when this gets posted, you can post those on the page that'll be on thefilmstage.com. You can also email us anything you'd like us to read, perhaps on the next episode, and you can do that at podcast@thefilmstage.com. What are we talking about next week? I'm 100% serious when I say I want to talk about the Lego Movie.
I've heard it's very good.
So join us next week. We will be talking about the Lego Movie, the new film from directors Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, who did 21 Jump Street, which is a movie that I thought was hilarious. And as a child who grew up basically obsessed with Legos, I'm 100% serious when I say that I have been looking forward to this movie for quite a bit. So that's it. Everyone, again, thank you for joining us. Let's tell you where you can be found online. Danny King.
TheFilmStage.com, TheKingBulletin.com, Twitter.com/TheKingBulletin.
And Nick Newman.
TheFilmStage.com and Twitter.com/Nick_Newman.
You can find me at TheFilmStage.com, Twitter.com/BrianJRowan, and on my personal site, DearFilm.net. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Come back next week.